I wonder what our image of Jesus is. When we think of the name Jesus, what do we think of? Do we have a picture in our minds? For most Christians, the word Jesus can be more like a heartfelt experience than an actual picture or a physical idea or an image. Recently, I've been reading some books to try and understand more about the actual real Jesus. And there are plenty of books out there you can read if you want to study it. A book particularly which I enjoyed was Jesus Through Middle Eastern Eyes, which tells you a lot about what it was like to live there 2,000 years ago and what it was like to be the person that Jesus was. Unfortunately, for many of us, myself included, growing up, we didn't always have the best images and the best idea of what Jesus might have looked like. I remember reading books as a child with pictures of Jesus who looked more like Bjorn Borg. He had blonde hair and blue eyes and really not like somebody from the Middle East at all. Similarly, last year we went to Italy for a little break, and we saw all the wonderful art you can see over in Italy. But all the paintings of Jesus seem to be either one thing or another. They seem to be either him as a baby, which is what we particularly think of at this time of year at Christmas, or he's dying on the cross. Neither really can give us a full picture of what Jesus looked like, or try and help us imagine what he is and who he is. In a way, the Christmas image that we see all around us at this time of the baby in the manger, at least we know there that's probably what he might have looked at, in the sense that babies have a sort of generic look to them. So Jesus was a baby, we know that, and here's a baby. We can see pictures of babies. But in the passage we read from Philippians, we learn about Jesus not through necessarily a description of what he looks like, but we learn about the real Jesus by learning about his mission, about why he came to earth, what he was about. Verse 6 says that Jesus did not try and grab hold of equality with God. Remember last week, Debbie was telling us about all the rights that Jesus gave up to come to earth. Unfortunately, this whole idea of not wanting to be like God is something that is at odds with the world today in some ways. Today, we like to think that we can try and be a bit like God in some ways. Now, if that sounds strange, think about it. We're encouraged by the media often to be judge and jury in cases and in news that's brought to us. We're encouraged to try and live forever, to be immortal, to live healthily, to try and spread our lives out as long as possible. And these days on social media, we're even encouraged to have our own followers, almost like a god. We're making churches for ourselves on social media, those who do it. But Jesus' mission wasn't like that. Jesus' mission meant that he wasn't power hungry. He wasn't grasping power. Quite the opposite. Verse 7, he says, he made himself nothing. It's very difficult for us to entirely comprehend what this means today. Jesus, who had everything, Jesus, who was King of Kings, Lord of Lords, Jesus, who reigns supreme, to go and become a person, a mortal, with all the problems and all the things we have to put up with as humans. The nearest I could get to it was this. And forgive me if this isn't particularly seasonally merry, but I'll read it anyway. This is an account of a prisoner who remembers his first day in prison. It was a real shock, he says. It was like my world came crashing down. I knew nothing about prison. I was nervous and scared. There were 8 of us on a van, all going to prison. We each had an individual cell in the truck. When we got to the prison, the door was opened very slightly. They took my hands and cuffed me to a prison officer. From there, I was marched to the desk in the reception area. I had to give my name and my date of birth. They took my picture from my prison ID card. All your clothes, especially football uniforms, are banned in case people start to identify with each other. The staff are authoritative, unfriendly. It was my first time, so I was anxious. Anything you aren't allowed is put into a plastic bag and stored for when you leave. I was worried. My heart rate went through the roof. I don't care how tough you are. That first time in prison is a real eye-opener. Imagine that times 100, times 1,000, for Jesus coming to be one of us. If you compare it with someone like Samson, in the Old Testament, you remember Samson allowed himself to be cajoled into having his hair all cut off, so he lost his superpowers. But he did it deliberately. He did it on purpose. He did it knowing what would happen. He did it because he was being foolish. But Jesus' mission to earth involved shedding all of his powers, all his glory. But he did it fully, deliberately, on purpose for us. Verse 8 says, he humbled himself. Again, we can't always get the full impact of these words until we open up and see what happened. I don't know if you ever watched Location, Location with Kirsty and Phil. I'm sure if they were advising Jesus where to be born, where to live, where to grow up, they would have been screaming at him, saying, for goodness sake, no, not there. A nation which had been invaded. A nation that had been totally humiliated. And then, not only that, but to live in Nazareth, to live in Nazareth, the worst part of the nation. Now, I've lived here for 18 months. And having lived in Manchester before, I know how much rivalry there is between Liverpool and Manchester. And Manchester people are always making fun of Liverpudlians, and I suppose the way around as well. But there's always somebody somewhere who's always that lot there who we look down on. And you could think in your own minds who it might be. It might be us. It might be someone else. But Nazareth had a particular reputation of being them, and that lot there. How do we know that? You only have to read John 1 to see when Jesus was calling his disciples. He called Philip, who full of enthusiasm went to see his friend Nathanael and said, come and see this guy. Where's he from? Nazareth. Do you remember what Nathanael said to him? Can anything good come out of Nazareth? That says it all, doesn't it, really? So Jesus was in an invaded, put down country, in the worst part of that country. But the humiliation didn't stop there. Jesus was humiliated throughout his life. He was born in a stable. That's not something you'd like to tell people, is it? We celebrated at Christmas, but really it was a shameful thing. It was a terrible thing. And then throughout his life, Jesus was humiliated by people. I don't know if you remember the story in Luke 7, when Jesus visited the home of Simon the Pharisee. Now this is a story I didn't really ever get till somebody pointed out the real meaning of it a couple of years ago. Jesus visits the house of Simon the Pharisee, and while he's there, I remember a woman comes and washes his feet with perfume and cries while she's doing it. In my mind's eye, it was just some eccentric woman who was trying to show her love for Jesus. And that's what this story was about. But no, Jesus had gone there and he'd been humiliated. He hadn't been welcomed. He hadn't had his feet washed. He hadn't been looked after. He'd been humiliated. But the woman with the perfume, she knew who Jesus was. She recognized that Jesus was God. Jesus was her king. Jesus was this special, wonderful person. So all she could do was try and make up for the humiliation he'd suffered by showing everybody else how much he meant to her. There's something particularly shameful and humiliating about being teased. Now, we all get teased from time to time. And sometimes when it's our name that gets teased, it can be quite hurtful. I don't know if anybody here has had their name teased and turned around. I did, and I've decided that I won't tell you what it was. But if you make a contribution to the card fund, then I'll whisper it in your ear later on. That's an incentive for you. I remember at school, we had a biology teacher called Mr. Winterbottom, who all the boys called Numbum, which we thought was very, very funny. There's something about somebody's name, when you tease them about their name, it's kind of cruel, but kind of funny. Unless, of course, it's you who has the teasing done to. So Jesus, the end of his life, is on a cross. What can we say more about that? That was such a humiliating death. You're pinned up there, perhaps for days, while people throw stuff at you, laugh at you. It was the most humiliating death possible. And while he was there, what do you think? Well, things can't really get any more humiliating. There's the Pharisees going by, making fun of his name. He could save others, Jesus' Savior. He could save others, but he couldn't save himself. Even if Jesus hadn't died on the cross, the humiliation he'd suffered would have been enough through his life to tell us this is someone who really cares about us. Hebrews 12 verse 2 says this, "For the joy that was set before him," Jesus that is, "he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God." You see, when Jesus came on his mission to us, he thought that we were worth it all. Then verse 9, "Therefore God exalted him." If you notice earlier on, Jesus is the one who made himself nothing. But now God is exalting him back to glory. In verse 10, verse 11, "Where every knee will bow and every tongue confess." It's only when I read this passage again, it occurred to me that it's every knee. Every knee. It doesn't say every Christian knee. Every good person knee, every knee. The knee of those who hate God. The knees of those who are cruel. The knees of those who we think deserve to die. Those who are beyond the pale. Every knee will bow. Some will bow because they love this Jesus, because they know who he is. They love him. Others will bow from fear because this is the King of Kings and they have to bow. They have no choice. So after Jesus had gone back to heaven, gone back to being the King of Glory, were things as they were before? Don't forget there's an eternity before and an eternity after this short time on earth. What had changed? Had anything changed when he went back into heaven? Well, we know that this Jesus, yes, some things had changed. His hands had marks on them. We read in the book of Revelation, Jesus has a new status. He's the Lamb. He's the Lamb of sacrifice. So Jesus has changed, although he is now still the same King of Glory, the same God that he always was. But how are things changed for us? The best analogy, perhaps, is that we now have VIP all access to all the glory, all the things that Jesus has, to heaven, to the city of God, to God's presence. We have that access, not because we're good, not because we're nice. We can come in because we're with Jesus. So what's the challenge in this passage, which tells about Jesus making himself nothing and then being exalted and glorified? Well, for Christians there's a challenge. For us there's a challenge. Because like the woman with the perfume, Jesus wants us to see him in the lives of other people. He wants us to draw alongside those who have been humiliated in this life and see God in them and show them God's love too. And he wants us to get to know him better. If you've got time over Christmas, why not read Matthew chapters 5 to 7, the Sermon on the Mount. Read a bit each day. Draw close to Jesus. Find out what he's saying to us. We can forget so easily. As you read those precious words that Jesus says, draw close. Feel him drawing close to you. That's for us who believe. What about those of us who are still searching for God and for faith? It's good at this time to remember that Christmas is the beginning of Jesus' mission to us. It's good to remember the humiliation he suffered. He did all of that because he thought you were worth the trouble. We believe in Jesus because he believes in us. So why not respond this Christmas and meet with the real Jesus and accept the wonderful gift that he brings to us? Shall we pray?